Advances in refrigeration, transportation, and processing in the past few decades have made food from throughout the world available routinely and affordably to restaurants and grocery stores. But for the past generation or so, there has been an increased interest in placing a premium on local food. For some, it's a matter of health. For others, a way to support the local economy. Still others see eating local as a way to help the environment. But what does it mean to people for whom food is not a luxury and for our communities at large? Today on the West Side, we explore local food and its impact in western Wisconsin. Good morning, I'm Dean Kallenbach. Good to have you with us today. Joining us for our program today are Crystal Halverson. She is the general manager of the Menominee Market Food Co-op. Crystal, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Peter Henry of Amory is here as well. He's a farmer and founder and board chair of the Farm Table Foundation. Peter Henry, glad to have you with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And Joseph Malawal is the community educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension for Eau Claire, Chippewa, and Dunn Counties. Joseph, good to have you along.
Thank you for having me.
Later in the show, we'll be joined by Michelle Rokamp of the From Volume 1 magazine to tell us about Chippewa Valley Restaurant Week, which begins later this week. And as a matter of disclosure, I will mention that Wisconsin Public Radio is a sponsor of Chippewa Valley Restaurant Week, and also that the Farm Table Foundation has been a supporter of Wisconsin Public Radio as a business sponsor. So where are you on the local food movement? Is this an important idea for you, or is food food? Join the conversation at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. So the local food movement, also known as locavore, aims to encourage people to eat foods which are grown relatively close to the places of sale and preparation. As I mentioned in my introduction, Western Wisconsin has a history of agriculture and food production, so I'd like each of you to talk a little bit about the characteristics of the local food movement that you see in our area. And Joseph, what have you observed in the three area county you serve with UW Extension?
My observation in the three counties is that there is a great potential for local food production. That would support the farmers in terms of income and also provide access to fresh, healthy food to all the residents, regardless of their income. There are challenges, of course, about how to do that, and I think we'll be talking more about that when we get into the program.
Good. Crystal Halverson, the Menominee Market Food Co-op is now in its fifth decade of operation. Not a new organization by any means, so step us through the history of the co-op and how it's evolved.
Sure, thank you. Well, we were founded in 1973, and that was just five people that wanted to start a co-op. There's really been three big waves of food co-ops in the United States. The first wave was during the Great Depression in the 1930s, and that was really the purpose of that wave of food co-ops was just to get people food into the hands of people because a lot of people were hungry. The second wave, which is we're a member of, was in the 60s and 70s, and that counterculture was sort of reacting to their parents' generation, which is what really brought big industrial farming onto the scene, and of course the use of widespread pesticides and herbicides. And so that movement of food co-ops in the 60s and 70s is really what led to organic certification and more thinking about what is in our food. And then we are right now in the middle of a third round of new food co-ops in the United States. And I think that this new wave is really a reaction to the consolidation of the food industry. People are really seeing the importance of local food, and they know that if we can maintain a diverse local agriculture in our areas, it can be the foundation of small and rural communities all over our country.
Has the local food movement changed the direction of the co-op through the years?
I think so. We've seen a lot of farmers come and go. It's really hard to be a small farm. And so we work hard to make sure that we're reaching out and finding ways that we can bring new farmers into market and make sure that they can grow enough in their first few years to begin to have a steady income on the farm. We have right now about 120 direct relationships with local farmers and producers. Every single department at Menominee Market has something local in it, even supplements, frozen foods, housewares, and packaged grocery. But of course, here in West Central Wisconsin, it's meat, dairy, eggs, fruits, and vegetables that shine. And we have local items all year long in every one of those departments.
How do you pitch Menominee Market Food Co-op to the community?
Well, I think that cooperatives are different because we're owned collectively by the shoppers. So Menominee Market itself is owned by almost 3,000 families that have each contributed a little bit of equity into the store. The wealth that we generate stays in our community, and I think the co-ops here in the Chippewa Valley are really some of the very last remaining locally owned grocery stores in the entire Chippewa Valley. So when you shop at a food co-op, your money stays here, where when you shop at a traditional grocery store, of course, most of that money that you spend leaves our community to go into the hands of the owners and the stakeholders, which oftentimes don't live around here. At a co-op, the stakeholders are us, and so we're doing the things that we want to do.
Peter Henry, you're founder and chair of the board of the Farm Table Foundation. Talk to us about the foundation and its mission and how you came to start this organization.
Yeah. So I have to give full credit to my wife, Carrie, who is a driving force behind the founding of Farm Table. But, you know, our organization was part of this third wave that Crystal mentioned. I do think the last great recession in 2008, 2009 really opened people's perception to the realities of what we're facing in an industrial food economy. And there was a burgeoning interest at that time in local food and starting more local distribution networks. We got caught up in that, and our deep mission really is about soil health. And soil health is one of those things that's emerging right now as a key way to fight climate change, which is, of course, on everybody's mind. So we believe that local farms and local farmers are the keepers of environmental stewardship. They do a great job with enhancing nutrition from their soil. And they also have great potential to sequester and cycle carbon out of the atmosphere. So we focused on local farms and small farms as being the providers of food to Farm Table Restaurant. We also started a distribution co-op for small farms at that time in 2014. Unfortunately, we could not make it as a producer's co-op, but we really went after it whole hog, so to speak, in the local food movement. And Farm Table's enjoying its fifth anniversary here in October, and we get quite a few visitors from all over this part of Wisconsin. So it's a very gratifying thing. It is a widespread interest in people to have direct local farm food in a restaurant context. It's not easy to pull off as a restaurateur, but it is something that people do still really respond to, respect, and enjoy.
Now, you're also a farmer in Polk County. From a production standpoint, what's your observation about the effect of the local food movement?
Well, as Crystal mentioned, it's really hard to make a living as a small farmer on small acreage. I mean, nobody said that you could buy a 40-acre parcel in the 21st century and make a living on it. I mean, it's very tough. It takes a lot of creativity. These are some of the hardest working people that I see in America. They're out there in all kinds of weather. And believe me, this last week when it was pouring rain, I was like, oh, my God, they're out in the fields working. And so it's tough. I'm not going to say that it's not, because it is really tough. But it is also a wonderful life, especially to raise children. And you do have your health care policy in your local food. So there are benefits to it. But it is not something that is for the faint of heart, and people who are thinking of getting into it really need to weigh all the pros and cons.
We're talking about the local food movement with our guests today here on the West Side. You just heard from Peter Henry. He's with the Farm Table Foundation of Amory. And we've also heard from Crystal Halverson of the Menominee Market Food Co-op. Let's shift back now, if we can. And Joseph Malawal is also with us. He's with UW Extension for Eau Claire, Dunn, and Chippewa County. So by definition, the local food movement is an alternative to the global food model, which exploded through most of the 20th century. And that was made possible by advances in refrigeration, transportation, and preservation, which allowed us to see foods from throughout the world in our grocery stores. So, Peter Henry, is the goal of Locavore to replace the global food model?
I think it's more to build a alternative model that is local, in which people can tap into at the level that they want to. It could be as simple as buying some proteins, meats from a local farm. We happen to have a nice local food restaurant in Amory. Crystal's got an organization there in Menominee, the co-op, where you can go, and they've already assembled a whole variety of local foods. So I think the goal really is to make sure that our small farms remain a possible, viable alternative for people to go into farming. We're not at a critical mass by any means. We love it when people step up and decide to take on a more local food. But replacing the global industrial food model is not on the table at this point.
Joseph Malawal, part of your area of expertise that you share with Eau Claire, Chippewa, and Dunn counties comes in the area of economic development. Much of our agriculture in western Wisconsin has traditionally been part of that global market. We ship a lot of the food that we produce in western Wisconsin away from here, even to other lands. Is the local food movement a threat or an opportunity for farmers here in the Chippewa Valley?
I see it as a great opportunity for the farmers, not only for the farmers, but for the entire community. When we talk about food system, we are talking about the integration of food production that take into consideration the environmental, the economic, and the social impact of the food production itself. And so that is very complex. Everybody is involved when you see it from that perspective. We're talking about, you know, how to feed 9 billion, you know, people in 2040 or even, you know, less. And the projection is that we're going to increase the food production by 50 to 60%, and we know that the land, you know, has been used, and the way to do that is, you know, depend on who you ask, you know, how do you do that? You know, some people will say, you know, more chemical.
And that would seem to me to be, you know, growing up with the Dow chemical commercials on the science programs that I grew up with. Yeah, better living through chemistry, right?
Right. But others will tell you, including the United Nations, that the majority of the population of the entire world is fed. Almost 70% is fed by small farms. And that is what they are seeing, that that is the only option, not to put more chemical, but to actually consider our production from larger scale to smaller scale. That is not, is not, is an opportunity, you know. I don't think that we are trying to replace, you know, the existing global food economy, but I think there's going to be some kind of cultural change. We don't want to wait until we are in crisis to do that.
Menominee Market Food Co-op carries local food, but also imports food from other states and even other countries. So, Crystal Halverson, what are the standards for food you bring in from outside the region, and are those standards different from those that you place on local foods?
Sure. Well, we bring in the food that our customers want to buy, and we do specialize in certified organic food and alternative diet type food, you know, paleo diet, gluten-free foods. We tend to be a first stop for people who are either newly gluten sensitive, just got pregnant, just had a health scare, and they're wanting to make a change in their diet. Our local food, we tend to be bringing along the farmers depending on where they're at. So we do a lot more education with our local farmers on how to best get their food ready for market, how to make invoices, you know, what to charge for their food. And our goal really is to try to help them grow to the point where they can move beyond us even and reach out to other markets. So for a lot of our local farms, we're their first customer. Mm-hmm. We're their first commercial customer.
What are the biggest challenges your organization faces in putting local food on your shelves?
It's so much more work. Just like it's hard to farm when you're, like, it's really hard to be small and independent in any business these days, in any industry. And I think it's really true in the food production and grocery industry both. We're expected to compete on price with all the big box stores, and yet we are putting a lot more effort in on the admin side and the operational side to accommodate small farmers. I'll take our $4 dinner as an example. So we provide a $4 dinner every Wednesday at the co-op, and it would be obviously much, much easier if we just ordered that food off the Sysco truck because it's a big volume, and sure. That would be so easy. but we really want to provide an alternative to fast food so you get a balanced, friendly, homemade meal. And we are committed to local. So we do source all the meat and eggs and fruits and veggies when possible locally for those meals. And what's great about that is we're doing 200, 250 of them every week. It's a revenue stream. It's an increased revenue stream for some of those really small local farms. So if they can give us 40 more pounds of apples in a week for a really small farmer, that's a big deal.
Peter Henry, Farm Table Foundation, when it comes to local food, emphasizes four C's: community, craft, conservation, culture. Which of those four areas of emphasis create the greatest challenge for the organization?
Well, I mean, they're all challenges for sure. In a restaurant context, I would say the craft is probably the one that becomes most important. As Crystal mentioned, we are taking direct from farms cases of raw products that come out of the field. They need a lot more treatment and handling and preparation than opening a bag of frozen peas, for example, and dumping them in a pot. And so the craft of cooking and of taking farm food and understanding how to not only prepare it so it tastes good, but to capture its nutritional value. We are also preserving foods at Farm Table Foundation for use in the wintertime so that we can keep our percentage of local food very high. That whole craft, that area of how do you do this? I mean, it did exist in Wisconsin, in this part of Wisconsin, in previous generations. And so we like to talk about it in terms of going back to eating the way that your grandparents might have eaten. And certainly that was organic food because they didn't have all the chemicals that emerged after World War II. But so part of what we do at the foundation is to teach that craft of cooking. We have classes and events, and there is in the younger generation, I think, a real thirst and hunger for craft in general, whether it is with food or the arts or all kinds of applications. And so I think there is an audience that's upcoming, and we're really excited to be part of that movement that is featuring craft as a big part of what we do.
Our topic of this hour is the local food movement and how it shows up here in western Wisconsin. The voice you just heard was Peter Henry of Amory's Farm Table Foundation, also joined by Joseph Malawal of UW Extension in Eau Claire, Chippewa, and Dunn Counties, and Crystal Halverson of the Menominee Market Food Co-op. After the break, we talk about community food systems and the role of such systems in dealing with food scarcity issues. Be a great time for you to join the conversation with your point of view on locavorism. 800-228-5615 is the place to call. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. Today we're talking about the local food movement with our guest Peter Henry of the Amory-based Farm Table Foundation, Crystal Halverson of the Menominee Market Food Co-op, and Joseph Malawal of UW Extension for Chippewa, Dunn, and Eau Claire counties. And Joseph Malawal, I want to spend some minutes with you talking about the area of community food systems. You've talked about it a little bit already, but for the sake of our audience, can you define that term as you're talking about it and explain its relationship to the local food movement?
So community food system is a collaborative efforts that integrates the production, the processing, the transportation, and the consumption of food in a way that enhance the environmental, economics, and the social health of a particular group of people. It can be region, you know, a county, you know, or the state of Wisconsin. And that conceptualization of food system kind of provide the holistic approach to bringing about solution to all the dimensions of food. From, you know, in the production, something is going on. We want to know what's going on in the production field. You know, what are the farmers, you know, struggling with? We want to know the transportation system and also the economics to the local, also the farmers, very important, the people that are producing the food. And also the consumption, who's consuming what, you know, who's left out. In terms of access, you know, you can think about income, you know, income level and people who are making choices with very limited resources. Yeah. And so the thinking is, how do you develop a food system that addresses environmental, the economic and the social? That is the concept that we are working on to see how we can do it. And from that concept, you can see that it would involve almost everyone. The farmers are to be on the table, the you know, the county leaders or, you know, political leaders, the business community, the cultural, you know, whether churches or clubs, everybody that eats need to be in the table, on the table.
The Clear Vision Eau Claire group that, that focused on poverty in our area identified food systems as a priority and food insecurity as a problem. How do you have a food system that's economically viable but addresses other social inequities and works for the environment?
That's correct. We have to go back to the cultural change. How do we educate? You know, what need to happen for people to engage in the production of food, where they buy, you know, buying, but not who is producing food, where does food come from, you know, what do they buy? Food is, you know, very important for our biological function, but it's more than our biological need. Food is social, food is environmental, food support all the important element of life. And for people to know that food as impact in our life is so important to change the mindset of the people to be able even to pay maybe probably 25 cents more on what they buy to support the local producers. And also to be mindful that not everybody has money. You know, we have population that don't have money. And when we buy that food also from our local farmers, these farmers do, this is their community. At a large scale, you can see how local farmers would actually be involved in helping, whether it is, you know, taking food to remote areas that don't have groceries, or even, you know, giving food to the people that don't have food in the, yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about that because some of our listeners may live in an area that's actually a food desert. They don't have access to different sources of food. They may have to shop at a convenience store, drive a long way to get to the nearest grocery store. We've had some grocery stores recently, a large chain that had financial trouble and closed a lot of stores. And even in Eau Claire itself, a big city like Eau Claire, the western half of the city didn't have a grocery store for an extended period of time. Now, that's a fairly small problem compared to people who just don't have that access. They may have to shop at a convenience store or drive a long way to get to the nearest grocery store. But on the other hand, you've got cities that are saturated with grocery stores. How do you account for that disparity, and what can be done to close that grocery gap?
So what we do in Extension is we help community, individual businesses to achieve their dream. This is what we do. We are linked to medicine. I'm going to do what, you know, people need right now, but I do have access to medicine if I can address that within my expertise.
Right.
But the community are the one to think about what do they want, what are their dreams when it comes to food, environment, and all that. And now we work the community through the planning process, the visualization of that vision and the expertise in technical support and also planning. I think the community have to start with the vision, you know, considering the social economic and environmental, and now we come in to help them reach that goal. We are responding to community needs, so we don't come with any preconceived idea about what to do, but responding to what community want to do and bring in the expertise and research-based knowledge to it.
The voice you're listening to is Joseph Malawal, who is a community educator with UW Extension in Eau Claire, Dunn, and Chippewa counties. And we're talking about community food systems. And Joseph Malawal, as you work toward developing community food systems, who are the players you have to bring together? This is a matter of coordination, right? And that's a key role that you're playing.
So when we start to do this, you know, initially we always want to, we look for people that do have passion in this. We call them community leaders, people who have a passion in food, who are maybe a social justice minded in terms of access, people who are, you know, care about the environment, water, anything that, you know, link them to food. And also we target, you know, people who have power, whether it's a economic, political power to be part of this. And so that is our strategy, to make sure that initially make sure that get the people that do have the passion and the vision, and then the community, you know, will join along the way.
What initiatives are you expecting from the work you're coordinating for community food systems? Are you far enough in the process to kind of know what sorts of new things might be coming from it?
I think we are not in the process of conceptualizing this. You know, again, how do you develop a community food system that addresses the three elements that I mentioned before, the economic, the environmental, and the social? And we are in the process of developing, but I think, you know, we're going to be coordinating more with the community. You know, what are their vision? What do they want to do? And then we will move from there. I don't have any solid program right now, but I have in mind what is leading into. And with support of a clear vision, I think we'll be able to make something in the area.
One area that we've seen other communities work with is the area of community gardens. Is that part of the vision of what you're thinking might be coming out of this?
Right. Food system is a lot of, you know, variety from restaurants to community gardening to CSA, that is a community supported agriculture, to all the variety of things that are occurring. So community garden is, I think we have seven of them in Eau Claire or more. Also is another way to look at the food system. Maybe that is not enough to provide the food that is needed, but also a way to learn about food and how food is grown and what it does to you, because it involves education, not only, you know, growing and consuming, but also that is some talk about food. And also community connection. While people are socializing and learning about, you know, their life and their community.
Yeah, and I think what Joseph said about passion is important. And I know that a big reason for our success as a co-op is the passion of the eaters that are there. I think a lot of people in our co-op recognize that the co-op is more than just food. It is about economy and social and environmental things. We have two different programs that we have right now for increasing access. The first one is called Fund Our Food Shed, and that's a grant program. We have just completed our second grant cycle, and we award money to local farms and vendors for really small projects that can either increase their productivity, increase the sustainability of what they're doing, or help them bring a new product to market. One example from our winners would be Mary Dirty Face Farm. They're an orchard, and they used their grant money to be able to graze pigs and lambs underneath their trees. And that's an example of something where they got a new product to market in the meat, but they also were helping with pest control underneath their apples. And I think those are small but fun projects that can really make a difference in an operation in its first few years. The second program that we have is Double Dollars, and this is something that is going on all over the country and in a lot of farmers markets. It's a program for folks who participate in the Wisconsin Food Share program, so people that are use an EBT card for their food. Every Tuesday, if an EBT shopper comes to the co-op for any fruits and vegetables that they buy, if they buy $5 or $10 worth of fruits and vegetables, they receive a voucher for $5 or $10 more to spend the next time that they come in. And we picked fruits and vegetables on purpose because it is really a double win. The person is getting more fresh fruits and vegetables into their diet over the course of the month, but it's also increasing the business with our local farmers.
Now, the co-op model, though, is obviously a lot to do with that, because that's a conscious decision your ownership has made.
Yes.
To allay future profits to build on your mission, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think co-ops have struggled with feeling elitist and knowing that they want the food to be for everybody, but it's hard to feel welcomed at in some places, you know, especially if you're on a tight budget. And so we want to make sure with our $4 dinner and with the Double Dollars program that we have these words above our door, everyone welcome, and we really mean it. And we have to do special work to make sure that everybody truly does feel welcome at the co-op.
Do want to remind our audience, there's time for you to join us. 800-228-5615 is the number for you to call. And Vern's been on hold for quite a while. Vern from Boyd is on the line. Vern, thanks for joining us. Go ahead with your question or comment. Still with us, Vern? Oh, that's my fault. Hang on. Vern, sorry about that. Now you're on.
Okay. I got a whole bunch of comments, so I'll just make a few.
Thank you.
Earl Butz started this corporate farming business back under Nixon and Ford. And he wanted promoted only big farms. And as long as we subsidize corn, we're not going to have, you know, these cash crops. My uncle used to grow like 10 acres of beans or whatever, cucumbers. And we could grow our own raspberries and blackberries and stuff like that in the sandy soils. But that's for your herbicides and all that stuff. They forget what replaced DDT was lead arsenate. And that's used widely in the United States. But if you want to know how a farm works, you go to the Mennonites about 5 miles north of me, they grow their own food, they can their own food. But see, the canners don't put iodine in the salt. And without the iodine, then you can't metabolize the food. But what it used to be is they would have a small farm, they'd work that during the summer and all of whatever, and then they would have a side job at a factory, or in the wintertime, or during the summer, even if you had a small number of cows. But the only way you're going to feed people is, like they used to have all these little farmers, they'd grow, you know, cash crops, and then they have a canning factory close by in the same county or area. And then everybody would take their stuff there and they would can it.
Yeah.
Or you would keep it in the fruit cellar. But what it's worth, a lot of vegetables really ain't that good for you. Fruits are better for you. Apple juice is really bad, so you really don't want apple juice. But like I said, if you want to know how it works, go to the Mennonites up here. Yeah. They grow in their own garden. Who wants to go out there and take care of a garden? And then they, you know, raise their cows, their pigs, and all the other stuff. They have an integrated food system.
Thank you, Vern. But, hey, Peter, Vern's right, though. I mean, we've had people doing local food for a long, long time here, and they're sometimes tied to religious organizations. But, yes, it's not as though there's not an example out there for us to look at.
Well, yeah, and our mission is to grow local food culture in Amory and more broadly in the region. And that has many different facets, including having a garden at home. And I think the part sometimes, you know, we're looking for these very specific programs and ways that people can get involved. And at the same time, as we've discussed, food encompasses so many different aspects of our lives. And I always like to say, you know, you need to have fun with this growing local food culture. It has to be something people want to be a part of. Learning is fun. Eating is fun. Being with friends is fun. Harvesting is fun. You know, this is an expression of culture and who we are as a people, how we gain our sustenance off the land. Right. It is a wonderful thing. It's a very interesting thing to study cross-culturally, but it should be at its core. It needs to be fun and it needs to create community.
I noticed you didn't include weeding as one of those. Joseph Malawal, though, one thing that Vern touched on that I think is, you know, he invoked Earl Butz, which brought a smile to my face, but because I do remember those days of, and look, I grew up on a dairy farm in western Wisconsin, and, you know, the dairy price subsidy structure was something that people were complaining about, you know, way back then. This whole area of government subsidies has been used to direct growing and agricultural practices for many decades now. Is there a political aspect to the sort of work that you're hoping to see done? And obviously, you know, you've got to be careful about espousing political opinions in your position at UW Extension. But this is certainly an area, this area of government subsidies could be an area that helps in some of the efforts you're talking about toward community food systems.
Right. I just mentioned that when we engage people, we are a bit mindful about people with power, people with economic and political power, because you just mentioned the subsidy. I always think that, you know, if there's subsidy for a larger firm, why not for a small firm if we go that way? But there are also other ways to do that, to kind of devise policies that would be supportive to food system, to community food system. As we're talking about this right now, you can see that it's not only farmers that are actually do have interest in this. We want good environment. We want good water. We want good food. All of us want good food. But we're not going to expect that to be done by one person within the farmer. We will have to be part of that. And part of that is that our political system is so important to be looking at this and do what they can do to enable farmers to be able to produce the food that we want to eat and the food that is enhancing the quality of our environment. So that is always policy is a key in this. Small farmers don't have lobbies, and they are busy with what they do, maybe unions, but union also may not be very effective. But that is, we need a political system to look at this and support it, whichever way, whether it is a subsidy or at least, we need some kind of private-public partnership in this because it's a common good. There's a common good to it.
That's Joseph Malowal. He is a UW Extension community educator for Eau Claire, Chippewa, and Dunn counties. We've also been joined, as we've talked about local food this hour, by Peter Henry of the Farm Table Foundation of Amory and by Crystal Halverson of Menominee Market Food Co-op in Menominee. Our conversation about local food continues, and right after the break, we're going to be joined by a fourth guest, Michelle Rolkamp of Volume 1 magazine, who will preview this year's Chippewa Valley Restaurant Week, which starts out later this week. So call with your thoughts, comments, questions, or concerns at 800-228-5615 on this topic of the local food movement and how it affects us here in western Wisconsin. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. So, Restaurant Week kicks off this week. It's been an annual event for the past few years. We are happy to welcome events coordinator with Volume 1, Michelle Rolkamp, to our studios. And, Michelle, good to have you along. We do want to let you know that with Restaurant Week, how many years now? Four, 5 years?
This is our third year
Restaurant
Week, yep.
So talk about this. Where did this idea come from?
It was before I started working at Volume 1, but it was, we want to support the community, and the restaurants in our community are a major part of the vitality of our community and the culture there. So we wanted to support the restaurants and give them an event to encourage people to go out and try something new or go to one of their local favorites and just give them their support.
So this is a program about local food. How does Restaurant Week support the local food movement?
Yeah, I think just making sure that we are sending people out to restaurants for Restaurant Week. We also are planning a farm tour to get people out to local farms that work with restaurants and grocery stores and just provide to people in general. So that's a big piece of it, too, not just going out to the restaurants, but where does the food actually come from?
What criteria do restaurants have to meet in order to participate?
They have to be a local restaurant in the Chippewa Valley, basically. We open it up to any restaurant here in our community, whether they're locally owned or a chain. Although when you look through the Restaurant Week guide and you go to the Chippewa Valley Restaurant Week .org Facebook page, you see a lot of locally owned restaurants.
How are locally owned restaurants how are they competing with the chains? And again, I realize Restaurant Week isn't excluding chains on purpose, but mm-hmm. but as you mentioned, a lot of them are local. How are they? What are they doing to offset the buying power and the marketing power that the larger chain restaurants can bring?
Yeah, I think from my perspective of the event and what I see with having a lot of the locally owned restaurants versus chains signing up to be a part of this program. I think they're doing things to get their name out there and to tell the community, hey, we're here, come visit us. We have our first taste event on Thursday, and we have a lot of restaurants signed up to participate in that. So they're looking at different ways to tell people that they're here and to get the word out to the community.
Now, is there a danger? Does Restaurant Week acknowledge the barriers to eating local? And if so, how does it address those barriers? barriers? And also, can you see how Restaurant Week might be perceived as being more for foodies than for the general public?
Yeah, I can see that definitely. And I know, you know, we encourage people to go out to eat, and we understand that that can get expensive. We do put out, you know, a passport program where you can win prizes to kind of entice people. And we give you, you know, incentives like that. And then the restaurants themselves are trying to put together a special menu and offers during Restaurant Week so that the deals are of value. You know, so you can go out to eat and you can get a special price and a lower discount than you normally would throughout the rest of the year. So you can go to more restaurants.
Restaurant Week is more about dining, more than dining out. What else is going on to help people connect more with their food and where it comes from? You talked a little bit about mm-hmm. some of the events, the other events that you have going on.
Yeah, we have quite a few events. I'm very excited for this Thursday is our first taste event. We have a dozen local restaurants set up. We'll be at River Prairie. It's Thursday. It starts at 6:30. You can purchase tickets for that on volume1tickets.org. And you can come and sample different restaurants. It's kind of like the kick off for that. We also have our farm tour, which is on Saturday, September 28th. We'll be taking a group of people from the local store in the morning to four different local farms in the Kadot and Chippewa area. So that'll be a very fun day to kind of really get out there and experience local food where it comes from. We also have CVTC is having a special event September 26th to benefit the students in their culinary program. Mm. So it's all Italian themed, and they're raising money to go to Italy as part of their program. So that would be a really cool event to go attend and support the students in our area who are looking to become chefs in the future. And then we also have Alina Kugel's beer tour or beer night on October 2nd. So it's just after Restaurant Week. But that's another great thing with a local company, and they're going to pair beer with dinner. So that's a really cool event, too.
So as you've worked on this project as the event coordinator for Volume 1, Michelle Rollkamp, what have you learned about the food culture in the Chippewa Valley? What is it about the food culture in this community that makes it unusual or different or not?
Yeah. I definitely think there's a lot of options out there. You know, as I'm not sure how many restaurants we do have in our community, but there are a lot of them. And we have close to 50 signed up for Restaurant Week. And I know there are a lot more that could potentially sign up. There are so many different options out there. And then when you talk to the community about these events and about going out to eat and support them, people are very excited. I've been at different events, you know, telling people Restaurant Week is coming, I'm hearing people say how excited they are to go to restaurants. They're excited to see what the offers are and to try something new. So,
Crystal Halverson, the Menominee Market Food Co-op is one of the participating locations for Restaurant Week. Why is this event a good fit for your co-op?
Yeah, I think it's a good way to reach out and for the people of Volume 1 to recognize that the Chippewa Valley is more than just Eau Claire. So we're excited to represent Menominee in this event. And we're doing a simple buy one, get one free for our sandwich line, our signature sandwiches. We chose them because of the bacon and pork and other meats that are on those sandwiches are all sourced locally. We wanted it to be accessible, so it doesn't have to be a fancy five-course meal. It can be something simple as a way for you to participate in Restaurant Week.
I'm getting hungry. Peter Henry, the Farm Table Foundation includes a restaurant, too. In fact, it's maybe one of the most visible aspects of your foundation. Why have that element as part of the work of the foundation?
Well, that's a question that is an interesting one to ponder, for sure. You know, when we opened in a small town of Amory that's 3,000 people and the downtown is somewhat struggling, it's actually hard, believe it or not, to get people to pull your door handle and walk in, especially if the building looks a little out of place in downtown. And so the restaurant was actually a really user-friendly way to get people to come in, have a bowl of soup or a cup of tea or a beer and look at the possibilities of local food and what it means, what it tastes like, how it's different. And so I think a restaurant is actually a really, really good way to try to break down some of the barriers. You know, people come together around food in a way that they don't in almost any other facet of society. And one of the main attributes of our restaurant is we see so many groups that come, families, friends, colleagues from work, and they love to sit around the tables and have something to drink and eat and talk. So it's a really, it is a neat way to do it, I think, to have a restaurant.
Where does the produce and other food ingredients come from then for the restaurant? And the other thing that I'm interested in is, how do you create a winter menu when local produce is out of season?
It's tough. Right now is actually kind of the height of the local food season. There's such a great variety of products coming off the land. And so the last figures I saw was we were up around 80% local food, which is really quite a high number considering some of the difficulties of getting things like oils and fats and nuts and things like that. But in the wintertime is an especial challenge. Now, the proteins are always there. We get the milk, the cheese, the meats. That's great. But we've spent all summer, we hired a preservationist, and she has been busy back there in the second commercial kitchen preserving things. The hard part in a restaurant context is, how do you bring those back, put them on a plate, and make a finished meal with them? And then also, what do you have to charge for that? Because you've already invested labor in the preservation process. Now you have to go back and look at your formula again and say, how are we going to price this plate? So it is a challenge, but, you know, families and farmers used to preserve food all the time. Mm-hmm. That's how we got by in this area. It's a big part of our heritage, and we really want to keep it alive.
I think it's also about teaching people to eat really seasonally as often as they can. We're able to, most winters, we're able to get all the way through till spring on onions, squash, garlic, you know, some of the storage crops.
Potatoes,
a lot of potatoes by the time February rolls around. Yeah, and so we do have some produce that is available, you know, any month of the year. And I think the freezer section is a good place to start, too. You know, you can, we have local, for little bit larger companies, but local lines of frozen foods.
Rural western Wisconsin includes a lot of farmland, obviously. Ironically, rural areas, Joseph Malwell, are the areas that are often left behind when it comes to community food systems. From your observation, how do we fold country folks into that community?
You know, it's an interesting challenge because you see in the rural area, the land is there, the water is there, the natural capital is there. And it's very ironic that people would be food insecure in rural areas where the food is supposed to be produced, you know. And I think infrastructure is a big problem. We've been talking about this. How do we develop an infrastructure that can preserve, you know, and transport that food to those areas? You know, we can, you know, innovative about what to do. I think it comes down to sitting together and trying to identify the problems and come up with solution with the community together. So this is the problem. This is what it is. We have this. We don't have this. What can we do together? And people can work on that project and keep, you know, building on it and learn from it and expand, you know, addressing the problems. I want to add a little bit on the restaurants. Also, schools, you know, institutions such as school, hospitals, assisted living, all those areas is another potential market for local food as well. But again, how do you develop that infrastructure, you know, that is linked so that it is not only on the farmers, but also another a system to kind of mediate, you know, that challenge so that we can have that pipeline of food from farmers to the consumers. And the cultural factor come into play when we talk about, you know, things like that.
Very interesting hour. Thank you to our guest. That was Joseph Malowal, who is community educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension for Eau Claire, Chippewa, and Dunn Counties. Our other guests this hour were Peter Henry of Amory, a farmer and founder and board chair as well of the Farm Table Foundation, Crystal Halverson, the general manager of the Menominee Market Food Co-op, and Michelle Rokamp of Volume 1 magazine, who told us about Chippewa Valley Restaurant Week. Catherine Thomas produced the hour. Mort Cypress is our on-air producer. Thanks for joining us. This is The West Side.